This is After the Gridiron, a podcast featuring interviews with retired football players. Thank you for tuning into the show. Before we get to the episode, please make sure you hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. Today, another player shares his incredible football journey with us and talks about his life after the gridiron. You're going to love it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of After the Gridiron. I am your host, Lyle Green, and today we have another great guest lineup for you. Today we have former professional NFL kicker, Sean Conley. So Sean played spent four seasons professional football with Detroit Lions, Indianapolis Colts, and the New York Jets, as well as some time in NFL Europe with the Scottish Claymores. He started in 93. He started in Detroit as an unrestricted free agent in 93 out of the University of Pittsburgh, where he was a great kicker, lots of accolades there. He's a Lou Groza Award finalist while there, and also finished second in the nation in field goal percentage, and was also strong academically, where he finished, where he was a all Big East selection for academic All-American as well. So also smart in the classroom. And now, after football, he owns a yoga studio, easy for me to say, with his wife, called Amazing Yoga. And he's the author of a book, The Point After, which talks about his life after football. So you can get all that on his website, which is www.seanconley.net. So, Sean, thanks for coming on and welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Lyle. I appreciate it. I'm excited to be here.
Cool. Thank you for coming. So I usually start off my episodes by asking my guests to say something about themselves that most people don't know. So what would that be for you? What's something about you that most people don't know about you?
I guess nowadays it's probably that I play professional football. It's been about 25 years since I hung up my cleats. So, you know, now being like a yoga teacher, it's whenever somebody finds out that I used to be a professional football player, they're usually pretty shocked, especially by my size too, the fact that I was a kicker. So I'm not like the biggest guy. I'm just a little bit over 6 foot, but what most people picture a football player to look like.
You know, when you're retired, when people are like, "Oh, you actually play football?" Is that... a lot of guys get to that point in their career where they're most known for stuff other than football. So. Yeah, we're all at that point in our lives. So, okay, so let's go back to the beginning and talk about when you started playing football. I'm sure you played other sports growing up. So, talk about your start in sports and football.
Yeah, absolutely. I got into sports at a really young age. My father was a really good athlete. I grew up in Erie, Pennsylvania, where sports is king, you could say. And he was a really good baseball player, basketball, football, track, and so. You know, sports was always on the TV in the house, and, you know, every Saturday and Sunday, like, that's what we did. We sat around and watched college football on Saturday, NFL on Sunday. And so I was just really into sports. I also played a bunch of different sports, but I got hooked mostly on football, and especially, I mean, I played different positions for football, you know, growing up in middle school, and so forth. But, I got really into kicking punt pass kick competitions. I started doing those at age 8. And so I just was hooked. And so that was something, even though I kept playing, you know, different sports all through high school, it was always kicking was something that was always like my big love.
Nice. So, I want to ask, you mentioned other sports, did you play soccer? And a lot of kickers kind of start out in the soccer field. So is that, where you got your kicking from? Or is it just, you just love football and love the kicking aspect of it?
Yeah, I think it actually helped my kicking because I started playing football, you know, maybe at the same time. I guess it was on age 8, started playing soccer at 7. So it was around the same time. I think it just helped strengthen my leg over the years, and it was something that was very, I guess you could say, complementary to like my, you know, overall training. And I was pretty good at soccer, but it was just, you know, when it came to sports, the sport that was still like my my number one was the number one passion was football, not just playing it, but watching it. You know, like when, you know, college bowl season would come around, I'd watch every single game, no matter who was playing. It was just something it was my number one thing.
I was the same growing up. Yeah, always a football junkie, and always loved watching it. And even though I didn't play when I was younger, I always loved watching it. And something my mom said I'd end up playing, and I was like, yeah, no, I'm not going to play. But she was right, and I ended up playing as well. So, so I was a football junkie like yourself. Okay, cool. All right, so you went to the University of Pittsburgh. So talk about going there. I'm not sure if you were recruited at all to go there or not. So talk about your choice of Pittsburgh over other schools.
Yeah, I had an unusual route. I actually, you know, even though I was really into football, strangely enough, I decided to go to a high school that did not have a football team because I went to high school, I decided that I would just kick on the side. So I figured I didn't need to be on a team to kick. So I played basketball and soccer in high school and just kept training for football. And then my hope was just to walk on to college. Unfortunately, that plan didn't go quite as smoothly as I thought. I first went to a Division III school, and I figured I'd work my way up to Division I. But when I got there, the coach actually, you know, decided that he didn't need another kicker. So I ended up leaving that school and going to another Division III school where I was lucky enough to be the kicker there for a couple of years. And then once I built up the confidence, I got more proficient as a kicker. I then transferred to University of Pittsburgh. I only had 1 year of eligibility left. I'd already used up 3 years. My senior year at Pitt, I was lucky enough to beat out there was five kickers on scholarship that were already there. And I joined the team in February during spring ball, and I moved up to number three by the end of spring ball. And 10 minutes before kickoff in our first game of the season against Kent State, I was named the starting kicker. So It was not the smoothest route, but it all worked out in the end.
Definitely took the scenic route to Pittsburgh, going through two different schools. And okay. And walking on, I'm guessing, as well. So
walk on.
Oh, wow. So was it kind of your dream? Did you always feel like you had the skills and the talent to make it, or were you just kind of hoping that you'd make it?
Yeah, even, you know, when I wasn't playing in high school and I was just kicking on the side, I always felt like I could play, you know, in the NFL someday. And I look back sometimes, I kind of wonder why I even thought that, but it was just, you know, something that I think I was just so passionate about that I just, you know, imprinted in my mind that I could play at that level. And once I got to college, I just figured I would just keep pushing it and see what happens. And, you know, there was a few times where I thought for sure I was going to give up because when I went to my second school, which was Gannon University, I made over 2 years. I was four out of 16.
Oh, wow.
I was horribly inaccurate. But I had a strong leg. I would be able to, you know, my kickoffs would go through the end zone. And when I missed, it wasn't like I just, you know, came up short. I would miss and it would, you know, it would go flying to the side.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, what was that movie? Happy Gilmore, where, you know, he could hit the golf ball a million miles, but, you know, he had like no accuracy, green, no discipline.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like that. So I knew if I could somehow figure out how to kick it straight, it would all come together. And luckily it all came together my senior year. There was a coach there that helped me a lot. His name is Amos Jones. He's been coaching in the NFL for I don't know how long. So after college, he bounced to the NFL. He's been in the NFL for, I don't know, 20 years, but he's with the New York Giants now.
Okay.
And he was someone who really helped me out. We would look at video after practice every day. And I remember one day I was sitting in the office and I had a laser pointer out and I was going over all these mistakes I was making with my kicks. And he came in and said, stop, you got to you can't focus on what you do wrong all the time. You got to focus on the kicks you make and the technique you did. And so that was a big, I guess you could say transformative moment for me as a kicker, because then I started to look differently as I honed my technique. It was more about focusing on, kicks that I made and getting into a rhythm that was more positive versus like always trying to correct my mistakes. And then that really straightened things out. And then I had a really good year at Pitt. I was 16 for 19,
oh, nice.
Super accurate. And, had a lot to do with just, more my mind than anything else.
Yeah. It's definitely a huge aspect to sports for sure. Especially at the professional level, it's the mind aspect of the game. Cause
right,
physically most guys are fairly similar and pretty equal, but it's the mental edge that makes
exactly.
a difference.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So prior to going to Pittsburgh, what was, like, I'm trying to imagine your kicking and trying to learn. What was the coaching like? Like, did you have anyone mentoring you or coaching you or teaching you? Because you didn't have a football team in your high school and a Division III school. I'm sure
they
don't really have much in terms of coaching for kickers. So what was the coaching aspect? How do you learn? Like YouTube, they probably didn't have YouTube back then, but what did you do?
Exactly. Yeah, I was pretty much self-taught. I just would, use what I – learn from soccer. I would also just study, players on Sunday on NFL. I would watch Morton Anderson, Gary Anderson, the kickers. I would just watch them really closely. I'd watch the steps they took, and I'd watch really closely the replays. So I just would watch them and just try to replicate that. And I just kicked a lot. There was a field just a few blocks from my house, and I would go there, day after day and just kick after kick. And I think that just practicing and practicing, over time I was able to, fix a lot of the stuff on my own, but, I still had the problem with the accuracy. I always knew how to hit the ball hard and far. So that helped a lot. But then, there was a coach at the Gannon University. That was my second stop. And he was the early 90s. He was actually a toe ball kicker, a straight on kicker.
Oh wow!
So he helped me as much as he could. He didn't know much about soccer style, and he actually when I first went to Gannon, we butted heads because I was a soccer style, and he was old school toe ball, and so he would make fun of me with my soccer shoes and stuff. But over time, we developed a pretty strong friendship and relationship, but he helped me as much as he could. And then, and then Amos Jones, the coach at Pitt, really, really helped me put it all together.
Okay. So was toe kicking, was that kind of like the mainstream in that time? I think Mark Mosley for the Redskins is the only toe kicker that I can remember, but was that mostly what was taught, or is it kind of, was that kind of a transition?
So early 90s, it was pretty much 100% soccer style. But, late 80s was, it was probably 10% of the NFL kickers were toe ball. It was definitely phased out by the time, I was playing in college. But you just still had these coaches who they had far more experience with toe ball kickers than soccer style. Most of the soccer style kickers when I was playing in the 90s, they are usually like from Europe. And so, the American soccer style kickers were just kind of getting going. With like Matt Barr and Chris Barr, they were like more new
pioneers
at that point.
Yeah.
Like you had like your Gary Premiums and Morton Andersons, and then, cause they were playing soccer there, and cause soccer was just getting going. I think when I first played soccer in late 1970s, it was brand new. So I was part of that, I guess you could say that new soccer phenomenon who then became like a kicker in America.
Yeah. Okay, cool. All right. So, so you finally got some good coaching in Pitt, which helped you to tone in your accuracy and rein in your leg there. So talk about your leg. You always said you have a powerful leg. You're always able to kick pretty far. What was the furthest kick you've made? Practice or game? What was the furthest kick you're able to make?
Practice, it was 70, but I'll admit it had a nice
wind
in my back.
That'll matter. That's still an amazing kick. Oh my goodness!
And the ball was fairly worn in. Kickers, we like to do. We like to get those balls all worn in, and they're like a balloon. And then a game, it was 48. I had a handful of attempts. My career was pretty short, so I didn't get to, just 1 year at Pitt and you know, the few chances I had in the NFL. So I didn't have too many chances over 50. I had a couple that were blocked, but yeah, it was 48 against Notre Dame.
Oh, wow. Okay, nice. But 70, that's, yeah, that's incredible. Wind or no wind, that's an incredible kick. Yeah, strong legs like that will definitely, it's like speed for position players, right? If you have, you can't teach speed and you can't teach leg strength. So when you have those things, right, those are things that coaches and scouts love to see. Okay, so let's talk about your opportunity that you got, opportunities in the NFL. You went to Detroit in 93 as an unrestricted free agent. So talk about getting that first opportunity. Was it tough? Were you expecting? Were you hoping to get drafted? What was it?
I my agent at the time, he said that, he got, calls from teams, and he was fairly confident. It was an interesting year where there was, I remember five or six teams definitely needed kickers, where they had kickers that were, either too old or who had, poor years. And so there was a lot of teams looking. So like five was unusual. Usually there's maybe like one or two openings per year. So, felt pretty confident because I had some really good numbers in college, and, I had a handful of teams that worked me out, Steelers, the Giants, and some others. So we were pretty, we thought that we might go. This was the first year the draft went from 12 rounds to 7. So for a kicker, I was hoping maybe like round 6 or 7. But, I sat by the phone. I didn't get the call. I would get a call from my agent a couple of times, like, "Hey, I just spoke with the New England Patriots. They said they're going to take you next." And then, they didn't. And that sort of thing. But as soon as the draft ended, it was just a handful of minutes after that, I got a call from the Lions, the Steelers, and the Arizona Cardinals with opportunities. So I went with the Lions because they with the offer, it also included like guaranteed playing time. So I couldn't pass that up because I knew I needed videotape if I weren't to make the team. They had a really good kicker at the time. They had Jason Hansen, who actually just retired a few years ago. I think he played till he was 45, 46.
You feel a long time,
Had a powerful leg. Yeah. So I took that opportunity, and then, once I got there, I was just so happy to be there. I knew I was a long shot to make the team, but just, being in training camp with the Detroit in the NFL and, Barry Sanders, it was pretty awesome.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. So what was your emotions like that first day? Did you think back to those days back in the field, kicking on your own and practicing in high school, thinking, am I ever going to make it? And then finally being able to say, I'm kicking in an NFL game, and I've got an NFL jersey.
Yeah.
What were your emotions like?
I think it was mixed emotions. I remember the first day feeling absolutely terrified. I remember being in the meeting room, and I was sitting in the back with the other, 12 or 13 rookies, and looking around the room, and, the head coaches up there, Wayne Fonts and Barry Sanders and, Chuck Long, all these, Rodney P, all these guys who were like, Heisman Trophy, NFL All Pros. And it was kind of terrifying, but at the same time, feeling like, wow, I can't believe, I'm part of this. So I was super excited to be there, but at the same time, then I was like, I know within a day or two or a week, it could easily end, I could be cut. So it was a strange feeling the whole time. I tried to soak it in, yet at the same time, nervous, during practice and so forth, because I always wanted to, be at the top of my game. And, within a week or so, I felt like I got into a nice groove, and the butterflies went away, and I was able to really enjoy it. But then once that whole period came up where they had the mandatory cuts, that's when, things get pretty down. You go to practice one day, and, for the morning session, you come back out, come back into your locker room, the guy's locker next to you is empty. I remember asking one guy, "Hey, what happened to so-and-so?" And so he said, "Well, he got cut." This is before they started doing cuts. And then he told me, he asked me, he said, "Hey, don't you know what the NFL stands for?" I said, "What?" He said, "Not for long." And yeah. I was like, oh, you know, because I started to get into like a groove, like this is going to last forever. But then, yeah, that was a quick wake up. And then they started the cuts that weekend.
yeah. That's the ugly side of professional sports and professional football that, yeah, guys can come and go. And it's a tough thing to get into. And especially for kickers, it seems like, because obviously there's only one spot that's that's available. So it seems to be the one of the toughest, you know, areas to get into as being the kicking spot, and to being able to try and earn the confidence of a coach for a young guy to be able to say, yeah, he's doing it now, but can he maintain that?
Exactly.
Can he continue it? So I can imagine being tough to break into the kicking area.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so.
No.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that was always like a challenge for me. Like, you know, my third stop was with the Jets, and you know, their kicker was in his late 30s, which is, you know, considered like, you know, over the hill for the NFL. And they brought me in, you know, like, you know, as cheap as can be. I signed the minimum, what at the time I think was like 222, and you know, he was making, you know, upwards of $1 million. And they brought me in as this young guy, and it's just, you know, but you still have to, you can't just like slightly beat out the incumbent. You know, if you're a rookie kicker, you have to like you said, like you have to show, prove
clearly
to them that
him,
like
yeah.
you're not going to crack. So you have to outperform him. And the sad reality is you have to hope that he has a bad training camp. So that's where it gets ugly.
Bad.
You have to root for them to not do well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about, kind of transitioning to life after football. So obviously as a kicker life and kind of being on the fringe on certain teams, it's an area where you're always kind of thinking possibly about life after football. So talk about what your mindset was year by year as you're, you know, going from team to team. Were you kind of preparing for life after football, or were you just focused totally on trying to find a place where you can stick?
I was definitely the latter. I was always very, very fixated on having this long, successful NFL career. And I think because I started at such a young age of you know, dreaming of playing the NFL, and then, you know, working really hard in college, like making those multiple stops of, you know, I'm going to keep going, trying to make a Division I. Then when I made Division I with Pitt, then it's like, okay, now I want to have a good enough season where I could be in the NFL. And then when I got to the NFL, you know, I really thought that I had made it. And I knew the odds were still tough for a kicker to break in and then stick. But, you know, I really thought when I made, when I signed with Detroit, that I could kick, you know, 10 or 15 years. And, you know, I could live, you know, life would be happily ever after that. So when my career ended, I was with the New York Jets, and I'd always battled injuries. You know, they started at the University of Pittsburgh, but I was able to, you know, fight through them with, you know, painkillers, muscle relaxants, and, you know, therapy and all that stuff. But it caught up to me to a point where it wasn't just pain. It was, I didn't have the leg strength. And, you know, in the NFL, if you can't kick the kickoff into the end zone consistently, you're out of a job. And when I was with the Jets, it was, you know, maybe I hit the end zone 50% of the time when, you know, I need to hit it 70% of the time. And I just couldn't. I physically, my leg was shot. So when the doctor diagnosed my hip as degenerated, my career was, you know, it was over. I couldn't do it. I had a hard time getting over that because, you know, as I mentioned, that's what I thought I was going to have, this long career. And I was stuck for a while. I really had a hard time, you know, moving forward with my life, because I just didn't picture it that way. And, you know, of course, over time, you know, I was able to, you know, see that there was more to life than football. But like a lot of players, I just had a hard time, you know, seeing beyond that end, you know, because I just felt like it wasn't supposed to go this way. And, you know, I always thought, you know, that I would be able to end my career on my own terms, but that wasn't the case. So I had a difficult time getting coming to grips with all that initially.
Yeah, that's something that a lot of players have. Yeah, a lot of players go through that. It's tough, especially when you're in the sport and you're in that zone, right? Your focus is totally on, you know, improving yourself and getting better, and other thoughts or anything else kind of is kind of like a distraction and doesn't help you get to that goal. So I can see, and that's what a lot of guys do, right? They're focused on, you know, being better and getting themselves better, and then once they stop getting the calls, right, then it's tough to turn that off, right? To make, turn that switch off and say, okay, now what I got to do for life,
right? Yeah, it's so, like, now what?
It happens to a lot of players for sure. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah.
So once you got to that now one point, what did you do?
Well, you know, I spent a couple of years probably just you know, throwing myself a pity party, you know, then there just came a point where I realized, you know, I was just, you know, being selfish. You know, I had, you know, I was married, I had a kid, and you know, I finally gave it up, because even after, you know, the Jets, I tried different ways to, like, stay alive. Like, I went to the Scottish Claymores. I tried to, I had an opportunity with the Arena Football League. So I had all these other opportunities that I knew I could keep playing, but I knew deep down I was just delaying the inevitable, because my leg, my body just couldn't do it. So that went on for a couple of years. But then, you know, when I, you know, eventually I realized, like, you know, this is, now I'm just focusing on myself, because, you know, my wife was always very supportive of my NFL dream and what I was doing. But then there got to a point where I realized that this is not something that we were really doing together anymore. It was something that I was just, you know, just doing for myself, because I was just so, I had such tunnel vision, and, you know, I wasn't doing my relationship a favor. I wasn't doing my body a favor. So I, you know, I moved on and started looking for jobs, but my first impulse was to find a job that was also had some sort of competitive nature to it, which, you know, I thought was the best thing for me. Later on, I found out it wasn't, but I turned to sales, where I, you know, could compete and, you know, try to make, like, a lot of money or whatever, you know, sales contests, whatever it may be. And so that's how I filled that void. But after a while, that, you know, I realized that wasn't, you know, the best thing for me to do in the long run.
For you. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, after trying out sales, I guess obviously turned to yoga and doing opening a studio. So how did that
I mean, this was all you know, my wife was I guess you could say she was like a pioneer in the yoga field. She, you know, yoga started becoming mainstream maybe, you know, probably 15 years ago, early 2000s or so. But in when I was playing in, you know, the early to mid 90s, she was already into yoga, and she tried to get me into it just to help my career and to help my back and hips, but I just you know, refused, because I considered it, you know, too passive, too gentle. Because, you know, at the time there wasn't, you know, at college teams or NFL teams didn't incorporate anything like yoga or meditation or anything, you know, that balanced out, you know, their football game. I remember, like, I'm trying to think of the Lynn Swann for the Steelers, you know, when he did ballet, you know, like,
Herschel Walker.
People talked about it, but they also kind of made fun of it, like, that it was, like, so different. And those guys were actually way, way ahead of their time bringing in something like that. And so I was very resistant to that. But then what happened was, once my career ended and my injuries, even though I wasn't playing anymore, my body was so beat up from the repetitive motion of kicking that, you know, I had a hard time even, like, walking down the street. You know, I'd have to sit down on the sidewalk, because my back would just completely, like, lock up. And sometimes I'd wake up in the morning and I'd have to crawl on my hands and knees to, you know, to go to the bathroom, because my back was just completely, like, just rigid. So I took up yoga after, you know, her pushing me for many years, and it healed my back and, you know, some other injuries I had. And after that I was sold, and then eventually began to teach. So that was, long story short on that.
Cool. Nice. Yeah, definitely something that a lot of players have to look towards. Like, obviously there's lots of damage done to your body during football while you're playing in your career. So, you know, doing things like yoga and Pilates, those type of things,
yeah,
and light lifting, right, to try and get your body back to a normal state and a functional state, you know, to be able to function. Because like you said, having to not being able to walk down the street and having to, you know, sit down every five or six steps is not a way you want to live the rest of your life. So, you know, being able to walk normally and to be able to do things and play with your kids and those type of things is something that all players are obviously want to do. So, you know, getting your body right and finding a way to get your body right is something that all players should be looking into.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's becoming more popular now. You know, I know the Seattle Seahawks for the last 10 years or so, they have like a dedicated yoga teacher, but it seems like a lot of teams, my wife and I here and there have worked with the Steelers and the University of Pittsburgh football team. So it's cool. I think it's definitely becoming more accepted that, you know, these players, you know, I think they, you know, the word is out now. Like they all understand, like they, you know, when their career's over, they don't want to be beat up. And it almost seems like some players do start to retire earlier than they used to. But I think there's a lot more awareness about, you know, how important it is to not overtrain. I think back in the day, like, you know, like there was, you know, no pain, no gain. Like it just, you know, the training regimens were over the top. But it seems like nowadays, you know, there's a lot more, you know, respect for players who rest and who do alternative forms of, you know, not just, you know, doing heavy weights, but doing like, you know, resistance bands and the other stuff that doesn't beat up their bodies as much.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of education and knowledge now in terms of what's best for training. And like you said, you know, overtraining is something that used to happen a lot. And people players are realizing that they don't need to train as much, especially as they get older, that they have to be smarter in their training instead of working harder, working smarter. Yeah. Okay. So, so when did you open, you and your wife open your studio and how's that going?
Yeah,
for you guys?
So we opened it in 2002. So it's been great. We've been doing, I guess, for like 19 years, and it's always been really popular. We teach a pretty athletic style of yoga, and I, you know, that comes from my football background, and my wife's she was a dancer and a lacrosse player, so she has an athletic background too. So our style has always been, you know, pretty physical. We usually incorporate heat in our classes, and so we tend to attract you know, also like other former athletes and, you know, people who, you know, weekend warriors. Like that's a pretty typical type of person at our studio, which is good, because like my wife and I, we've always, you know, been very physically active, but we've always been also very intrigued by, you know, the idea of yoga, like helping you slow down and be more balanced. So typically people who are attracted to like our studios also push themselves, but I think there's also something that they're also looking to bring in some balance as well. So that's a snapshot of our philosophy.
Nice. Okay, cool. And yeah, before we get going, let's talk about your book. So you've written the book, The Point After. So talk about your book and what it's about.
Yeah, it's essentially about my football journey and the highs and lows. And there's for the most part, I guess probably there's more lows and highs. But I think that's the whole one of the ideas, or one of the reasons why I wrote the book. It's just is my, you know, the biggest thing that I struggled with in the book was the identity and the career ending before I did. And so I, when I wrote the book, I just tried to be as honest and as raw as possible with all the highs and lows, and, you know, just, you know, trying to share what it's like to be, you know, a kicker as well, being on the outside but not just, I want it to be more than a sports book. And I think it is because, you know, anyone can relate to, feeling insecure, you know. And I think for kickers, like we're pretty insecure, and we play a lot of head games and self-doubt and so forth. So I try to, you know, share as much of that as possible. So anyone can relate to it, not just someone in the sports, but just, you know, in business and their own, their own personal lives and any identity issues that, you know, they have as well. And you know, the hope is to you know, show that we're so much more than what we you know, think we are, or what our goals are in life. Because as I mentioned before, you know, I to me, like, making the NFL was like, that was the end all be all. And of course, now looking back, you know, it was super, you know, grateful that I was able to, you know, play as much sports as I could. But, you know, it's there's other opportunities to, you know, make an impact in the world other than kicking a football.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, football is just one small segment of our lives, and there's many years after football that a lot of the great things we can still do and hope to do other than football. So yeah, that's a great point there. So let's finish off with what I call top of the mountain moment. So it gets kind of a summary of your book type of things. But how about just sharing, you know, some words of wisdom for some younger players? What do you think are ways they should approach football and their thought process of what football is and what?
Yeah, I think playing different sports is one of the most important things right now, especially with the youth. You know, we're seeing a lot of repetitive injuries from players just focusing on one sport year round. And I follow the University of Pittsburgh football team pretty closely, and it was during the last signing class, I believe, that the head coach Pat Narduzzi tweeted out the number of sports that the recruiting class played. And I think of like the 22 kids in the class, you know, all of them played at least like two sports. And it was something like, I think it was like maybe the third or fourth recruiting class in a row. This is like for Division I, they still played other sports. And I think that's, you know, that temptation to focus on just one sport, I think is what can really shorten, you know, these athletes' career, you know, not even like if they're looking to play professionally, but even college, because, you know, you still see kids who, you know, they focus on one sport through high school, and after their first year in college, they're done. And maybe they're not even done physically, but they're done mentally. And so think that's, you know, like one of the big takeaways, to just, you know, play other sports. And it's also okay to just, you know, take your, you know, your baseball mitt or whatever it is and just stick it in a drawer for a few months, and, you know, to not even play your sport for a few months. I know it can be really, really hard, but, you know, it just, it keeps, you know, your spirit alive for that sport, your hunger, and it can be hard to do. But if, you know, if you're looking at a long career, the, you know, the more you can, you know, avoid that, those repetitive, you know, pounding on certain parts of your body, the better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that's definitely something that's an issue for today's athletes, and everything's trying to be specialized and special camps for all these things. And yeah, like you said, it's doing something repetitively over and over, it's going to cause injuries. And that's kind of a huge problem with lots of young athletes now, where you see in the different sports, guys are getting hurt who are just focusing on one sport because they don't have the balance of other sports and different movements and all those type of things to kind of counter what they're doing in their main sport. So yeah, I definitely agree with you that playing many sports, something I did, and many athletes before me, and all the great athletes have played many different sports, and I think it's something that they should continue to do and to diversify their sporting. And like you said, at times just take a break, and the mental break,
right?
They'll focus on other things beside one sport. So yeah, some great words of wisdom there. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right. So Sean, so thank you so much for coming on. It's been
a great
episode. Yeah. Appreciate your time. Appreciate your story. It's been awesome. What you've shared with us. So again, for those listening, make sure you check out his website, www.seanconley.net. Information on his book, which is available through his website or through Amazon or wherever you get books. His book is The Point After. And also, if you're in the Pennsylvania area, make sure you check out his studio, The Amazing Yoga, with him and his wife. They're doing some good stuff there. So Sean, thank you so much, and appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you, Lyle. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Take care. listening to After the Gridiron. If you're a fan of the show, please make sure you subscribe to the show and also leave a rating and review. By doing that, you also help to spread the word about the podcast and assist others in finding the show so more people can enjoy this great content. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, with the links to those being found on the website. Your support is very much appreciated. Also, please visit the resources page on the website for links to our sponsors and affiliates. Their support helps to keep the show running. So go to www.atgridiron.com/resources to check them out. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you when we kick off our next episode.